Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement. I'm Les Raymond, and I want to thank you for joining me today for another episode of the podcast. Today, I have Devin Burke on. Now, Devin is the creator of the Sleep Science Academy and author of Amazon bestseller, The Sleep Advantage. Now, I think if you're listening to this, the idea that sleep is important is, pretty understood. I think it's one of those things that everybody at some point has enough, data points that they notice when they sleep well, they feel better. And if you ever have a really poor night's sleep, it might be hard to put in words, but you don't feel as good. So to just keep it super simple, we know it's important. And we know we feel better when we have our sleep a little more dialed in. So at the Mindful Movement, where we continually try to inspire folks to play a bigger role in their sense of well-being, it would be hard to overlook this very basic need that all humans and what seems to be pretty much all living animals on the planet require, which is enough quality sleep. But there's a lot of things that go into the idea of what quality sleep is, and there's a lot of different ways to maybe apply practices and strategies to improve the sleep that you're getting, whether it's the amount of sleep you get, which is important, but maybe even more important, the quality of that sleep. Now, this topic is robust, and it's hard to really cover all the angles of why we need sleep, why it's important, and how to do it in just about an hour conversation. But we're going to do our best to at least address some of the ideas around sleep that might be overlooked. And one thing that really stood out to me in this conversation, which I think is really in alignment with the Mindful Movement in general, is how much the way that we think about our sleep affects these needs, whether it's the how much sleep or how good of sleep we're getting. And I find that fascinating. And I also find it, like, exciting because it's another way where power is handed back to us if we're awake to these ideas. Because there's so many things you're not going to be able to control in your life, but there are a lot of things you can. And with practice, one of those things is surely how we think about things. You know, to be able to watch our default mode of how we think about something and understand that that's just a sample of something that we're well practiced at. For instance, for someone that thinks, I'm a poor sleeper, you know, that's not necessarily an absolute truth. You might have a history of not sleeping well, and thus you identify yourself as if it's part of your genetic blueprint. But it's pretty clear that there's a lot of factors that could interact with and thus change how well we sleep. So just the simple fact that if we change the way that we think about it, it could start to affect how, you know, those outcomes, that's exciting. The other thing that really stood out to me is how when you're not sleeping well, the stories that arise inside about what that means could have a big impact on how you continue to sleep. For instance, if you get up in the middle of the night, and I could speak to this, we mentioned a little bit of this in the conversation. If you get up in the middle of the night and then you just start to worry because you're up and you are worrying about the idea that you're not going to get enough sleep, that could very well make it more challenging to fall back to sleep because you're kind of busy worrying. And you could get really well practiced at that. So that'll be kind of a self-fulfilling thing that just continues. But just a tweak of the thought process around how you accept the fact that you're up in the middle of the night can have a significant impact on your ability to quickly fall back asleep. And that's great news, you know, because that's something that we can control and we can practice and we could grow stronger in that process. So we will discuss a little bit of those ideas and plenty other ideas around sleep in this conversation. So thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Devin Burke, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast today. We all know, everybody knows that sleep is important, and I'm hoping that you can shed some light on the what's, the whys, the hows. Tell us how you got interested in sleep, and give us some of your insights.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk sleep with you today, Les, and share. I'll give you the quick version so we can get into, you know, how to help people improve their sleep and how, you know, we can give you the strategies and the techniques and tools to do that. Long story short, I was actually going to be a doctor of physical therapy. Took a break, went over to Europe for 3.5 months before I was going to jump into that program. Realized wasn't that passionate about it. Led me into health coaching, which then led me into studying a lot of different psychologies. And I got really into performance psychology. So I was working with a lot of high performing entrepreneurs, a lot of business owners, corporate leaders, executives. Someone I was working with had issues with their sleep. I knew nothing about sleep. I studied exercise physiology. I studied, you know, mindfulness and a lot of these different, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, all these different sort of psychologies, if you will, that can help people with their performance. Never studied sleep. More I studied sleep, the more interested I got, because I realized not only is it the foundation of health, but it impacts performance and it impacts every aspect of our life. So long story short, started to study the science of sleep, started to look into what was available for people that don't sleep well, which I found out is actually the majority of people. About a third of the population has some type of sleep challenge. And I realized that what I was learning and what I had learned could be applicable to helping people solve their sleep challenge, specifically insomnia, which was the challenge that this this specific client was struggling with. So that led me to found Sleep Science Academy. And for the last 5 years, we've been helping people around the country holistically restore their natural sleep rhythms through addressing the mind and the body, because that's really what needs to be addressed to help people be free of it, not have to rely on sleeping meds or supplements or any of the other things that are really band-aids when it comes to this specific challenge for sleep.
Gotcha. So you said what percentage of people have a sleep issue?
Well, 40 million people in America. Now I would say it's a lot more than that. Have insomnia, but about a third of the population struggles with their sleep. So either they're not getting enough sleep, or they actually have some type of chronic sleep issue, whether it's sleep apnea, insomnia, parasomnias, which, night terrors and things like that. But it's a massive problem.
So insomnia, just for the terminology, is that basically just having trouble sleeping through the night? Or does it refer to something more specific?
Yeah, there is more specific criteria. So there's two types of insomnia. There's what's called onset insomnia and maintenance insomnia. Onset insomnia is classified as people that have issues initiating sleep. And there's different subtypes of that, like acute, transient, and chronic, which I can get into the sort of classical definitions around each of those. And then maintenance insomnia is those that have trouble staying asleep. And so essentially acute is, you're having issues with your sleep for a couple of weeks. It becomes chronic after 3 months, and it's considered chronic if it's impacting your daytime activities and it's more than three times a week. So that's sort of the clinical sort of, I guess you could say, diagnosis for insomnia. But sometimes it comes in waves for people. Oftentimes it comes in waves. We help people in all over the country, and they say, my insomnia comes in waves. Like, I'll have weeks where I have great sleep, and then I'll have weeks or months even that I really struggle, and it can come and go. So there is a lot of different variations within those types. But does that give a little more context?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's such a big number of people being affected. I mean, it's like our country's a bunch of zombies walking around sleep deprived.
It's true. And it's really scary. I was actually just yesterday, I was on a consult with a gentleman in Minnesota who was a truck driver. And, we do these consultations to see if what we do can help people. And he was explaining to me, he stopped working, thank God, because he had insomnia, and he realized that it was dangerous for him to be on the road. And, we were getting into the consultation, and this is a big problem. He's like, yeah, I was working, even though I was having insomnia, even though I was kind of falling asleep at the wheel. And then finally I said, hey, I don't want to kill myself or other people. So I decided to, take a leave of absence. But that freaked me out, because there are people driving on the roads, and right. There's a lot of crazy statistics out there that leads to fatal car crashes every year. Daylight savings, when people fall back and we lose an hour of sleep, the next day there's more car crashes, there's more heart attacks.
Yeah, I think I've heard that there's more heart attacks, statistically significant. And then on the day that you get the hour back, it's like the day of the fewest heart attacks.
Yeah, which really tells you something.
Speak to the stress involved with not having a good night's sleep, and that extra stress is just enough to move the needle on a mass population?
I think it's hard to really say to really draw a conclusion to that, but I would say yes, because sleep and stress are so bi-directionally linked. So the more stress you experience, the less sleep you experience. Less sleep you experience, the more stress you experience. So it's kind of this vicious paradox where one affects the other drastically. A stressed body will not rest. A body that's in subtle fight or flight or has adrenal fatigue, I always hear people say, I feel wired and tired at night.
Right.
And, you know, if your body feels like it's being chased by a tiger and your body's doing what it's designed to do, which is protect you, so it's dumping cortisol and adrenaline into your system, of course your body's not going to go to sleep. You know, of course your mind's going to be on hyper aroused and on
alert. So even though that you're like sleep deprived and physically tired, because your stress hormones are elevated, they're basically there to keep you awake for, you know, basically basic survival, assuming that you're in a stressful situation and assume you need to be, like your nervous system's assuming you need to be awake to pay attention to whatever stress is in front of you.
That's correct. That's exactly right. It's biologically programmed to do that. And unfortunately, it's a lot of times people's biology now is keeping them stuck, because, you know, most people are in chronic fight or flight, low grade stress, especially since the pandemic, since the lockdown, since all the fear mongering on the news, a lot more uncertainty has been introduced into most people's lives. Uncertainty usually leads to stress. So, you know, there's more stress as a society, there's more stress individually with the new challenges that have come along in the last couple of years with what the world's going through.
It's interesting. I heard, I'm sorry to cut you off. I heard a recent statistic about they were polling people what their biggest concern was in the political realm going forward to the next election. And the majority said inflation. And I'm thinking, I remember taking economics in college. It's what my major was. And, you know, understanding a little bit about the dangers around it. But like in my lifetime, that's never been a fear that like the average person has ever thought about. Like there's all these new kinds of stresses aside from the stress of, you know, maybe the fear of getting sick or not seeing loved ones. But like the average person, the last decade, 20, 30 years, like that word was never, inflation was never even talked about. And now there's like average people that are legitimately worried and like layering that stress on top of other stuff. So I would assume that everybody at some point has had a good night's sleep and like has recognized that moment where, or maybe they didn't recognize, but like where they felt good because of that good night's sleep, whether it's the right duration and the appropriate quality. Like what is it, like what's the why? Like why is it so important to get good sleep? What's the things that like take place during sleep that seem to be such a big deal when you don't get them?
Yeah, so even though it seems like our bodies are asleep when we're asleep, they're actually wide awake. So much actually happens during the night. And from a very high level, in a nutshell, essentially that's when our body repairs and recovers. That's when our immune cells are most active, clearing out cancer cells. That's when, you know, the glymph system, which is like the lymph system in the brain actually shrinks a little bit, and this cerebral spinal fluid flushes out beta amyloid and the plaque that builds up the creates Alzheimer's. So essentially our body goes, it's like every night, it's like we take our body into the repair garage and the repairman goes through, finds all the, you know, the damaged cells and cleans it out. And that happens mostly during, you know, delta deep sleep. Also, you know, our mind, like from an emotional standpoint, dreams, you know, it's dreaming is like emotional first aid. So the repressed trauma, you know, micro trauma and macro trauma, you know, all the emotions that weren't dealt with because you didn't have time or maybe you didn't have the tools, that all gets sort of worked out throughout the night. Through dreams.
So you're saying dreams serve a functional purpose to like manage or process traumas?
Yeah, they can. They can. I mean, and this is obviously theory. It's kind of hard to at this point, but there are theories that now point to that. Like that is why do we dream? And there's a lot of different reasons, you know, people have a lot of different theories. That is one theory. It's to work out the emotional traumas that get suppressed throughout the day. And again,
do trauma, they know what makes you dream? Like what triggers, like what system or what series of steps? Is it just being in the right brain state? Like you mentioned deep sleep and delta waves? Like, is there just a certain wavelength that once your brain hits that level of wavelength, that mode, that dreams just start to happen?
Yeah. So that's, you know, REM or rapid eye movement. There's really two types of sleep. So there's non-REM or non-rapid eye movement, and then rapid eye movement. And so non-REM is really when we're in deep sleep. That's mostly when our bodies are recovering physically. And then REM actually is our bodies become paralyzed because you don't want to be acting out your dreams. And yes, there's different brainwave states associated each stage of sleep. That's one of the ways you know that you're in a stage of sleep is, are you in, you know, theta or delta, or, you know, you're essentially, your brain is going through this dance over the course of the night. About every 90 minutes, you're going through these different, you know, you're completing these different sleep cycles. And so, yeah, there are different stages in the brain that are correlated to different, you know, types of sleep. And when we're talking about quality of sleep, we're really talking about the delta sleep and then the REM sleep, the dreaming state. That's when most of the, you know, the magic happens, although you have to get through light sleep to get to those stages. So every stage of sleep is important.
So so deep sleep is related or linked to that delta wave?
Yep.
And that's non-REM. So the REM sleep, what wave like length, yeah, or is that related to?
I believe it's a theta. I'd have to double check, but I believe it is theta. And sometimes actually there's certain types of meditation where you could actually get into like a sort of like a dreaming state of sleep. I believe it is theta. I'd have to double check off, you know, don't quote me on that, but I believe it is the theta state.
I know, yeah. You can get into theta through the meditation, and some people can even get in the delta. I just didn't know how the REM, where that fit in with those wavelengths.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've heard to sleep referred to as like the Swiss Army knife of health. Like it kind of makes everything better. So part of it is like this cleansing that goes on where the brain kind of clears out. You said the glymph system, basically, I guess that drains into the below the neck, like the regular lymphatic system, which among other things acts as like our sewage system in a sense. So, right. So gets kind of debris out so that you could, you know, excrete it out in the toilet in the morning or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you said there's some kind of consolidation of like emotional things that are worked out through dreams. Potentially it's a theory. Are there other mechanisms? Like, I assume there's just basic DNA repair, like cellular regeneration things. If you, you know, have an injury or torn, you know, you sprained an ankle, that's time where your body can focus on. Are there any on like repair? Are there any other like, I guess, big things like actions that take place that you know of?
I mean, those are the big ones. Really, it's physical body repair. And that's important for immune system health. And I think a lot of people, you know, that's the most important. Like we've all had the experience of not getting great sleep and then getting sick. And there's actually really a lot of interesting studies around people that don't get adequate sleep. The flu vaccines are not as effective. So that's really important, you know, the activation of T cells, and, you know, that's like 100% why one of the main reasons why we need to sleep is to repair. And then along the sides of the mental sides of why we need to sleep. Yes. It's also a reprieve from just, you know, being on all day. It allows the mind to rest, while also coming up with new, like on the other side is creative ideas, like creative problem solving. So what's interesting is that there are people that you can work in your sleep. You can solve problems in your sleep. It can be used as a creative solution. And I've spoken around the country, and I always ask in workshops and things, you know, has anyone went to sleep with a problem and then woke up with it being solved, like a technical problem. And I've heard the most amazing stories of people, and I'll share one. Actually, it was my my accountant I asked this to. And she went to, she was working on this massive project, lots of Excel spreadsheets, lots of numbers. And before she was going to submit it, and she said, you know what, let me just wait. I'm going to sleep on it and double check it in the morning. And then in the night, she dreamed one of the sheets in one of the cells in the sheets had a, had a, you know, an error in it. And when she woke up, she was like, oh, that's interesting. And she went and checked, and it did. And so, you know, so like, it's amazing. You can actually, it is pretty weird. You know, dreaming is a weird thing. It is. And there's a lot of interesting things and stories around, you know, what can be accessed when you're dreaming. But yeah, so to answer your question, those are the high level things. It's physical repair, you know, activation of the immune system, and then working out emotional traumas, dealing with, and also consolidation of learning. That's another really important one as well. Like short-term memory getting shuttled to long-term storage, just allowing the brain to sort of reset so it can, you know, process better. And there's actually a lot of interesting studies around when we don't get enough sleep, how that affects our ability to learn and also really? Retain information.
So basically you're saying we're kind of taking the things we learned of the day, like short-term memory, and putting it in a different section of our brain where it's kind of stored long-term, thus freeing up the capacity for new short-term learning to take place?
Yeah, exactly. And a great analogy would be like if our brains are kind of like computers with CPU, it's kind of like you're closing out some of the browsers to free up some of that processing power. That's kind of like what happens.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely noticed where, and I have a history of some sleep issues. Maybe I could pick your brain a little bit about it. Where when I didn't get good sleep, I mean, it's kind of like, I guess it would be, if I were to label it, it'd be like a brain fog.
Yeah.
Like, it's like this vagueness where it's hard to maybe point your finger on the problem, but you just don't feel real clear. Like, it's not a good day to be, you know, taking a math quiz kind of sensation. And which is, you know, it's a frustrating, it's not a good sensation to experience. The audience has probably heard this, but I went through a period where I got, contracted Lyme disease from a tick bite, and my health got like just, you know, thrown for a loop. And one of the things that was big was, or that was really negatively impactful, seems, was the treatment. So like a sizable dose of a broad spectrum antibiotic. And, you know, it was a miracle, I think, initially, because it knocked out the Lyme symptoms like within, you know, a couple days. But I was supposed to take, and in hindsight, I don't think I would do the same routine if I was doing it again today. But I continued on this antibiotic, you know, as the doctor ordered. And by the end of the dose, all my Lyme symptoms were long gone, but I was so wrecked. And one of the things that was wrecked was like sleep. Like I was up, and I don't know why, like, I don't know if the microbiome plays a big role in regulating our sleep, and I just, you know, dropped a nuclear bomb on my gut microbiome or something. But it was trouble in all aspects. Like, couldn't fall asleep well, couldn't stay asleep, you know, couldn't regulate temperature throughout the night. Like, yeah. You know, wake up weird, like you're sweating 1 hour, the next hour you're cold. And it was like, I would say it was very regular for, you know, some period of time, maybe multiple weeks. And man, that took a long time to kind of get back on track. And I don't know. So you mentioned, you shook your head, like, do you know if there's a connection between kind of the organisms that are, you know, living in us and do they have some type of modulatory or regulate, you know, are they a regulator of our sleep or our circadian rhythms at all? Or
yeah, so this is really fascinating, and it's so interesting to me that, you know, the gut is like, they say, like the second brain, right? And the gut, you know, it produces serotonin and melatonin and a lot of hormones, and, you know, the vagal nerve that runs, you know, from our brain all the way down into our gut. That's there's so much, I think, new science and things that are coming out that show us how important the gut is. And when it comes to sleep, absolutely. If you have any type, if you have leaky gut, or if you had a atomic bomb of antibiotics that just blew up the good and the bad microorganisms in your gut, it absolutely can have effect on your sleep, 100%. Because, like I said, there's a lot that gets produced in the gut, you know, serotonin, melatonin, all these different neurotransmitters. And if those neurotransmitters get thrown off, I mean, your hormones are essentially what control the system in the body. So if that gets dysregulated for whatever reason, because you have, you know, you're eating crappy food, or you had antibiotics, or, you know, for a number of different reasons, then it starts to affect the other systems in the body. And a system in the body is the circadian system. You know, every cell in our body has a circadian clock, and the master circadian clock is the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain that syncs all of the clocks together. So, you know, so if one aspect of the body gets thrown out of balance, it has repercussions down the line. And insomnia or sleep challenges, they're just a symptom that something is out of balance. It's not actually the problem. It's almost never the problem. People think, oh, my sleep is the problem. It's not the problem. It's a symptom that there is a problem. And usually it's that some other, it's like insomnia is further down the creek. Like sleep issues are further down the creek, that something in your life or in your health, usually both, is just out of balance or compromised in some way. And the gut for sure is one of those upstream things that then affects downstream the circadian clock and rhythm and health.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember learning that, I don't know what percentage, but a large percentage of the serotonin is made in the gut. And I guess the pathway starts with tryptophan, amino acid, eventually gets to serotonin a few steps later. That's what becomes the melatonin, which we all kind of recognize, you know, as playing a role in, as like this sleep hormone. I know melatonin has other purposes too, I think within the mitochondria itself, but I guess, you know, one thing it does, it helps us, you know, fall asleep.
That's right.
So I guess, yeah, if your microbiome and stuff is having a role in producing that serotonin, then obviously that would be problematic down, you know, to get the melatonin you need, the proper amounts. And what do you think about melatonin? I mean, I'd like to get into some of the, you know, the how-tos, like how do we improve our sleep, and, you know, at what point does it make sense to use interventions that we commonly see, whether it be melatonin or 5-HTP or, like, you know, a supplement, magnesium 3-8, you know, these things that I see marketed to help sleep. And I've definitely tinkered myself with lots of different stuff. I've even tried some pretty high doses to explore. Like, where do you begin? I would, because the word supplement to me seems like, well, that's supplemental. So it's just like with your diet, you want to have a good diet before you supplement the things that you're struggling with. So how does that apply to, like, sleep? What are the basics of where to begin to move the needle in a positive direction?
Yeah, so supplements are like maybe a 5%. Like if you look at a pyramid there, and like let's say like the food guide pyramid at the very top, right? Like it's the smallest area that really has an impact. Not that there's not a time and a place for supplements. I think most people are always looking for a quick fix, an easy fix. And it really, I mean, they can be helpful, but you're not going to notice the biggest difference in your sleep health by taking a supplement, even if it's the right supplement, a high quality supplement, and you're using it in the right ways. There's so many other things that you could do before you, or that I would recommend that you do or explore before you just take a supplement. So I just want to start off by sharing that. And so at the base of the triangle would be really mitigating stress. And there's a lot of different types of stress. There's mental, emotional stress, there's physical stress, and then there's environmental stress that leads to mental, emotional, and physical stress. So I always like to do an inventory of what's creating the most stress. Because again, stress and sleep are bidirectionally linked. So looking at first, our process and what I found to be extremely helpful and effective for people that have tried everything, all the sleeping drugs and therapy and the acupuncture and all the things, is first looking at the mind. So first looking at, well, what is creating stress in my mind? What are the thoughts, the beliefs, the mental patterns that are creating unnecessary stress? So we do a deep dive into inventory of, what do you believe about your ability to sleep? What do you believe about what happens if you don't sleep? Are those thoughts useful? So this is really where some of the cognitive behavioral therapy techniques and acceptance and commitment therapy techniques can be extremely helpful.
That's really interesting. Actually, yeah. Can I give an example of maybe, is this what you're talking about? I remember there was a while where I was getting up in the middle of the night and I would get so stressed about being up and worrying that I wasn't going to get enough sleep. And then I would feel tired later in the day. And it made it worse.
That's exactly it.
And then, and then one day, I don't know what was the catalyst, but I remember Dev and I would completely flip the script in my mind. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm up. The world is asleep. It's 3 a.m. and this is my time. And I would either go across the hall and I would do some yoga and meditation. I would take a bath, light a candle, no artificial lights, and maybe use some plant medicine and have it a solid hour of nourishing me time and then go back to bed. But I think the thing that had the biggest impact was you alluded to the word acceptance, not just being okay with the fact that I was up, but embracing it like it was a gift. Oh, I get to do this. And all the misery went away. And it was a really powerful lesson for me. Is that what you're referring to? The beliefs about your sleep?
Yeah, I found, working with hundreds of people over the last, several years, that's the biggest lever, that when you can embody acceptance and you can flip the script, so to speak, or reframe and start to cognitively restructure, it makes a massive difference. Because no matter what you do, you can't will yourself to sleep. You can't force yourself to sleep. And if you're having thoughts and things that are creating more anxiety and frustration, you're just keeping your body in that stuck state. So if you can get to a place of, if you do wake up, actually being accepting and allowing, just say, this is my reality. I don't like it, but it's okay. It's going to pass. And you could actually get yourself to a place where you're just in that state of acceptance, that creates the greatest opportunity for your body to then do what it knows how to do, which is sleep. Just like your heart beats, your lungs breathe, your body knows how to sleep. There's an innate intelligence, innate wisdom, and it's just getting connected to that by removing the barriers first in your mind. So that's, I was actually really surprised about how big of an impact that actually makes on people's sleep. It's something so simple. But then the more I thought about it and the more I kind of dove into this and really dissected it, it makes perfect sense, because sleep's not something you can force or control. So what's the opposite of forcing and controlling something? Accepting it.
Accepting, allowing, yeah.
Allowing. And so that doesn't mean that you don't do something about it, but there it's, so you can be in a place of accepting something while you're doing something about it. And it does get a little bit tricky because, again, sleep's one of these things, the harder you try to improve, sometimes the worse it gets, because it's not something that you can force. And trying to control or force something that isn't something that you really can control or force actually ends up backfiring. It's a lot of paradox in this.
Interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that you would have come out with that being like the base of the pyramid. What are some of the other things that are kind of foundational to the process?
Yeah. So once you are understanding the ways in which your mind actually is getting in the way of your body, then it's time to start to look at, well, what are the barriers in your body? So what can happen and what often does happen is our bodies become, they get in a habit of insomnia. So they get in a habit of waking up at a certain time. And just like you get hungry around the same time every day, or maybe you have a bowel movement around the same time every day, our bodies love rhythm. And sometimes the rhythm is a rhythm that's not really what we is desirable. So then it's okay, well, how do we reset the sleep system? So how do we remove the physical barriers to help you find the balance with the circadian clock? So how do we, you know, make sure that you're getting enough light during the day, making sure that, you know, you're not taking naps, which reduces adenosine, the neurochemical that builds up and creates sleepiness. How do we make sure that we get natural production of melatonin? So, you know, restoring the gut so that your body naturally produces it, as well as not having artificial light so that it's, you know, not creating that faucet from being blunted that needs to be turned on to initiate sleep. So those are like, so we first address the mind, then we start to look at the physiology of sleep.
Naps really that detrimental? Like, what if you need it to play catch up because, let's say you have a few days in a row of less than optimal sleep. Would the net benefit be of the nap be positive, even though it might make it harder to fall asleep that night,
depends,
like as early as you'd like?
It depends. If you have chronic insomnia, then yes, I would say do not nap, because it's going to keep you in, you're like
in the cycle,
prolonging the cycle. So as hard as it is when you're tired and you're like, you have this time and the space and you're like, oh, I could just lay down, take a nap and that'd feel so good. You know, pushing through that.
They do feel so good sometimes.
Like, yeah, I'm a big believer in naps. Personally, I nap, you know, a lot, but for people that have chronic insomnia. So there's a difference for people that don't have insomnia. Like let's say for people that consistently don't struggle with sleep, and let's say you had a couple of nights of you were traveling or, you know, you're out at an event, you know, and whatever, napping is a great strategy to, you can't really catch up on your sleep, but you can allow the body to sort of heal. You know, there's this concept called sleep debt, and you can't really go back in time to repay sleep debt. It's not like your credit card where you can repay it, but there are things you can do to, you know, to sort of find the balance. But if you have chronic sleep challenge, then you don't want to nap because again, it reduces sleep pressure and then it's going to affect that night. And then that could start the whole spin over again. And that's not what you want.
And the sleep pressure is speaking about those adenosine receptors.
Yeah. So adenosine. Yeah. So it's a neurochemical that builds up in our bodies and our minds that creates sleepiness. And interestingly enough, caffeine, which is the most like abused drug on the planet, it's very similar to it. Actually, it blocks the receptors of adenosine. So that's where you get that sort of wakefulness, but it's also in your system for 6 to 8 hours, a half-life, 6 to 8 hours. So your system for, you know, 12 to 16 hours. And so, you know, caffeine is not something that you want to, if you're having sleep challenges, you want to really be mindful of how much caffeine and when you drink caffeine.
But if you have it in the morning and let's say you're done, like I'll speak to myself, I have a cup really early, like maybe 6 a.m. ish. And then sometimes I have a second cup by like, and I'm done by like 8:30. Like, that blocks the adenosine receptors, but they would be like, that's not affecting their ability to still build up by evening time, is it?
Well, it depends on how much caffeine, and it also depends on what type of metabolizer you are. So are you a fast metabolizer or are you a slow metabolizer? You know, ideally you wouldn't be having caffeine that early, because when you wake up, your cortisol is highest in the morning, and caffeine creates a cortisol spike. It's, you know, it releases adrenaline as well. So it creates more stress on the body. And so,
you're trying to ruin my life now. So you're saying not to drink. So if you're going to drink coffee, drink it in the morning, but not too early in the morning. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Ideally you'd wait like at least an hour to have your cup of coffee. You know, the first thing really would be great if you just woke up and had a big glass of water, because we lose about a liter of water through respiration and sweat every night. So we're kind of already waking up in a dehydrated state, and caffeine is a diuretic, which dehydrates you even more. Plus it's like dumping gasoline on a cortisol fire, which then leads to more stress hormones, which then leads to, you know, being a little frantic throughout the day, or, you know, whatever, which leads to more stress. So it's sort of like, it's like all these little things affect your sleep. So like a great night of sleep happens as soon as you wake up. So like every little thing you do throughout the day affects your sleep, and then your sleep affects everything that you do throughout the day. So it's like, you know, so not, you know, you don't want to be like restrictive. You know, you want to live your life. You want to enjoy your cup of coffee. Like I had a cup of coffee today. But there's things you can do to mitigate the stress of those things. Like I said, like optimize the timing of caffeine, or throw in some mushrooms like reishi or chaga into your coffee, which help buffer, you know, mitigate the effects on the adrenal glands.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah. Or you can throw in some L-theanine, like take an L-theanine pill with your caffeine, which really helps, you know, it just helps like a sustained focus versus like a jittery kind of focus. So there's like all these little like levers that you could sort of pull so that you could still enjoy, you can still have your cake, or what's the saying, eat your cake and have it too, or
have it and eat it too.
Yeah. You can kind of do that. Because like, it just like alcohol is another thing that's very common for people to have a glass of wine at night, or a nightcap, or whiskey, tequila, whatever. A lot of people end up using alcohol as a sedative for sleep, which then can be a problem because it can lead to alcoholism. And so alcohol is not great either, but you know, again, like, you got to live your life. Having a tequila and a glass of wine once in a while, if whatever, right? But if you're using these things, if you're relying on caffeine because you're not getting good sleep, you know, you might want to look around, you know, changing some habits around caffeine, or if you're using alcohol to manage your stress, or as a sedative to put you to sleep, then okay, there's something there to look at. There's something that's not in balance. So it really, you know, it depends. Right? It depends on your lifestyle. There's so many factors here.
Can I ask? So I work in a gym environment for the day job, and one thing that's really consistently come up with my clientele that's, we'll say, like middle age, you know, mid 50s to 70 kind of population, the waking up to go to the bathroom. And I'm always wondering, is it the chicken or the egg thing? Like, do you get up because you have to pee, or do you get up and you have to pee? So, and I don't know if the answer to that matters so much as like, what do you do if that's a very consistent pattern? Is there any ways to interact with that? I've heard people talk about it really being a function of the one of the hormones, I think it's ADH, antidiuretic hormone, where that's dysregulated, which could just happen from getting older. You just get generally worse at making hormones. You know, you just get worse at everything, unfortunately. So like taking the substrate, the food, and making all the things that the body needs. Or are there other things going on? You know, let's say somebody's not drinking a lot at night and they can't really point their finger to that. but they just get up. And I mean, I hear it with, I don't know if I have a client over 60 that doesn't complain of getting up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom.
Yeah, it's such a common thing. And it really is hard to pinpoint because it really does depend on the individual, and every body is different. And so the challenge, for me, it's not so much an issue that you're waking up and using the restroom. The issue becomes if you have trouble initiating sleep again. That's where the issue, because essentially every 90 minutes we're waking up. Just most of the time we're not conscious of it. So, you know, after a sleep
cycle. So it's no big deal if you're able to fall right back to sleep.
Yeah, no big deal. No big deal. Yeah, the big deal happens is if you start to think about the next day, you start to think about all the things you need to do, should have done, could have done. Okay. Mind starts going, monkey mind, stress hormones. You know, now all of a sudden you're up for an hour or the rest of the night.
Right.
And you're getting frustrated because you're going to dread the next day because, you know, it's painful when you don't sleep. So that's the challenge. It's not an issue if you wake up and use the restroom. It becomes an issue if you start to allow that to affect your, you know, initiating sleep again.
Interesting. That's kind of comforting to hear. I've become a very skilled at like walking through the bathroom, not using any lights, like navigating the bedroom and bathroom space in the dark. And like, it's funny, the things, because I've heard all the things about, you know, the blue light and you flip on a switch and then, you know, you're really throwing off the rhythm because of the information coming into the eye. So, you know, there's been a couple of times over the years where it's backfired. I bumped into a wall or, you know, some embarrassing mess maybe, but 99.9% of the time it goes pretty smooth.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a great little invention, and actually I got it last year for Christmas in one of those Secret Santas. I have a massive family. I have like over 30 cousins. Mom's side of the family is 13. My dad's side of the family, he has 9 brothers and sisters. So 13, awesome. And it's a huge family. Anyway, I really wanted this thing because I knew how valuable this little device could be. It's a potty light. And it, what it does is you put it in your toilet and it's a motion sensor kind of light. And so when you walk into the bathroom, it senses movement and it lights up the toilet bowl in like a low lit sort of, you know, red light. And so for people that have that issue, night lights are great. And that little potty thing, I don't even know what the name of it is, a potty light, you can probably get on Amazon. Those are great to have. Because
and the red light's important. And for the listeners, if you're not aware, Devin, please correct me if I'm wrong. The red light is not such a big deal at night because we've evolved to be around fire at night, but we really haven't, you know, been around artificial lights very long that have these spectrums that are, you know, quite different than what we would have been able to create before they existed, which would have really just been fire. And then the only other light would be, you know, the moon or starlight.
That's right. Yeah. And it's one of the things that I've been experimenting with the last like year is reading under red light at night. And like, man, it just, you know, I turn that red light on, I start reading, and like instantly I'm starting to get tired. So you can use like light and temperature have a massive impact on quality of sleep. And you can sort of play with light and temperature to improve your sleep quality. I think a lot of people though overemphasize the physical things and disregard the mental side of what actually is the real challenge. Like everyone looks at, oh, let me wear blue light blocking glasses. Let me get, you know, do this routine. Let me, you know, make sure my mattress is the best mattress. And all those things are important. And I'm a huge component to, you know, getting an amazing mattress. And, you know, but I think that sometimes we tend to overlook the mind stuff because you can't see your thoughts, right? You can see your environment. You can see your phone. It's like we live in a physical world. But I feel like a lot of times people overemphasize and become almost like obsessed, which leads to more frustration and stress. It's like, oh, I'm doing all the right things, but this isn't working. And it's that creates frustration, which then creates stress. And it's like, there are millions of people tonight, probably billions, that will do all the wrong things and actually sleep great. Hmm. You know, the quality of their sleep might not be great, as great as it could be, but they'll have no trouble. They're not going to have an issue sleeping. So that tells you something. It's like, you know, don't get hung up on the perfect sleep routine and all these little things. You know, the stories that we tell ourselves, I think some definitely impact, you know, our reality. And so we got to be careful about what we believe, because it does create some challenge.
I feel like that's reason for a lot of optimism, actually, for someone that's not, you know, sleeping well. Can you maybe give us an example of a scenario where, you know, that mindset, maybe something common that comes up or something that sticks out in your practice where, you know, somebody makes a lot of progress without maybe changing so much of the structure or the logistics and the time and the light and the temperature? And
Yeah. Every one of our clients, we tend to have them let go of all that stuff. And then we, at the end, we'll reintroduce some of it when it's useful. Cause it's not just about what you do. It's how you think about what you do. So if you believe that you need to do anything in order to sleep, that's a barrier to you being able to sleep because it's not true. And how do I know it's not true? Because there's millions of people tonight that are doing all the opposite things and sleeping. So, you know, so it's really, you know, not to say like, I love optimization of sleep. I love like all that, the tech and, you know, the red light and the, you know, all the things, the supplements. I love all that stuff. You know, I'm a huge fan of amazing mattresses, most best investment you possibly can make in your home. Most important room is the bedroom. The most important piece of furniture is the mattress. But you really don't need anything in order to sleep. And believing that you need something to sleep actually becomes a barrier for most people. So we tend to help people let go and you know, let go of all the things they think they need to sleep. And then once they build up the confidence that their body knows how to sleep, then we can start to, you know, reintroduce some of those things that can be helpful for quality of sleep. Because a lot of times the people that have sleep issues are the reason they're having sleep issues is because they're obsessing over it. And the underlying fear that most people that have sleep issues I've identified have, this is the biggest thing that most people fear, is that they're going to continue to have sleep issues for the rest of their life. And that is not true. It's not based in reality. It doesn't have to be. And so that's like at the base level, people worry, oh my God, am I going to have this? Is this going to be like the rest of my life? Like how much longer am I going to continue to suffer from not being able to either fall asleep or fall back asleep if I wake up? And then the mind starts to stack all these other things on top of it, which then creates a lot of resistance and a lot of stress.
What's the mindset that you recommend for someone in that situation to just begin to work on the belief that they sleep just fine? And
just to accept that that's where you're at and know that it will pass.
Oh, gotcha.
Like people, because, you know, that's a catastrophic thought. I'm going to have to
have despair.
Yeah. It's a despair. It's a hopeless thought. It's, you know, and it leads to more, we call them negative sleep thoughts, NSTs.
Okay.
Right. And so we have this whole process where we take people through. I probably identified 100 beliefs that people think are unique to them that are not unique at all. And it's always a really fun thing in our program for people to go through this process, is the mindset training, where they circled the, out of the, I think it's 100 beliefs, the top like 10 that really are like sticky for them. And then they'll realize when they're on these group calls with people all over the country that can't sleep, that those thoughts are not their thoughts, because other people are having the exact same thoughts. So what does that tell you? It's not your thought. And like, if it's not your thought, then, you know, it's like, it, then we really can start to play with, okay, well, is it a useful thought? Is it really true? Like, and then we can kind of go through some of the, you know, the cognitive restructuring that allows us to then get to a place of acceptance.
This sounds awesome. And I know you're short on time. I feel like I could easily go at least another half hour. Maybe I could try some of this coaching service with you, and then we could do a follow-up on the podcast so the audience can kind of hear what you did and how it helped, if you'd be open to that.
Yeah, let's connect, you know, be more than happy to explore that. We definitely have like a whole process. I personally don't really coach anymore. I have coaches coach for me, but
fair enough.
But yeah, we can totally explore that and
see. And then if people want to reach out, what's the best way for them to explore this option of getting a coach? And I didn't even know before you reached out that there were sleep coaches. So I think it's awesome. And it sounds like it's really important that you guys exist and the world could use it. So if people do want to learn more, what's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, Sleep Science Academy. One of the things that I'm rolling out this year is actually training wellness practitioners to be sleep coaches. Okay. To have the tools and understanding to actually guide people, their clients that have sleep challenges, to successfully be able to overcome them beyond just the traditional sleep hygiene, you know, stuff like, oh, okay, make sure that you know, your room's cold and dark and you know, you don't use your technology, like all that stuff. Like, we go way deeper than that.
Awesome.
So one of the things that I'm looking forward to sharing with the world is that offering.
Oh, that's great. That's exciting stuff. Well, we'll go ahead and link to that in the show notes too. And if you listeners out there have any questions about this topic, please send them my way. And if I can't answer them, I'll do my best to get Devin to answer your questions. But Devin, I want to thank you for taking the time. And I know you have an appointment in 5 minutes, so I'm going to let you get out of here. But I really appreciate you reaching out, and I appreciate this education. Looking forward to learning more and hopefully having you back on the podcast at a later date.
Thanks, Les. Yeah, this was fun. I appreciate you having me.
All right. And for listening out there, hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
I want to thank you again for tuning in and listening today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I know I did. Devin seems very passionate about his work, and I'm really glad there's people like him out there sharing this wisdom so that we could all learn and apply in ways that we feel are appropriate for us and find ways to fit these ideas into our lifestyle. So hopefully you could get something out of this that helps you move the dial in the quality of your sleep. If you do sleep better, good things will happen, I assure you. And if you have any antidotes that you would like to share about things that have helped you with your sleep more specifically, I would love to see them in the comments, and maybe the community can learn from that. So please do share. And if you have any questions about this conversation, also send them my way, and I'll do my best to respond or to get Devin to respond. And I encourage you, if you haven't already taken a deep dive in this topic, to check out a book. I have not read Devin's book, but I've read a couple other books on sleep, and my guess is you could get value out of any of those books. So why not start with Devin's if you like this conversation, and share with the audience something that you got from it. If you think you know somebody that would also benefit from this, especially someone that you know might be struggling with their sleep or struggling with their health, then please send this conversation their way. And that's about it for today. So thanks again. Always grateful for your listening. And I hope you all have a great day.